His words program patriots talk across the country.
Year after year, there are guys that I say, that guy would be great here, and they don't do it. And when they do it, it's Josh Boyce or Aaron Dobson or N'Keal Harry.
Get up to date on the latest Patriot storylines with Tommy Curran.
So why is he so damn special that we have to call him Tom E. Curran?
Now, on Dale and Keefe.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is NBC Sports Boston NBC Sports Boston Patriots reporter Tommy Curran. Tom is brought to you by Zuti. Build any apps your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. Good afternoon, Tom.
Dale, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. You got the fellas with you?
They're right there.
You better
right,
believe it, Tom.
Right.
Hello, TEC.
Hello.
All right, so we had a theoretical this morning, earlier in the show, and Fitzy said we got to ask Tom his opinion. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are playing the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Is Bill Belichick rooting for Tom Brady to win the Super Bowl or rooting against him?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. He's got Jason Light down there. He's got that cover. I don't know. He's got Gronk down there, and I think that he's agitated with the Gronky. Yeah, I wasn't able to watch the game, really. I mean, I would have liked to. But,
he definitely would not watch it, right.
That was something I just wasn't able to catch that.
A lot of games.
Yeah, a lot of games. Preparing for next year.
So does he give a little ringy-dingy to Andy Reid to help him find a way to beat Tom Brady?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, I think if he's got preferences between the two, and we know that in 2018 there was a conversation between any number of different coaches and Bill Belichick in preparing for Sean McVay. And that's all legal tender. I mean, you should do that. You want to win the game. Talk to people you know within the league. But I wouldn't be surprised if Andy reached out to Bill and Bill said, yeah, he's going to hate it if you do this.
Mm-hmm. Tom, five games for the Patriots and one game where they were able to throw the ball around. And clearly, I think we're learning that was more to do with the Seattle defense than anything else. And I know they did not have a lot of practice time. Belichick has been quick to point that out over the last several media sessions. But what kind of likelihood do you see the passing game improving going into Sunday's game?
Here's what's hard about declaring that it sucked, definitely. The fact that the offensive line was as jumbled as it was and they didn't have the practice time puts an asterisk next to that game. Then, of course, the Brian Hoyer-Jarrett Stidham connection puts an asterisk next to that game. You didn't really need it against Vegas because you screened their faces off and also got great production in the running game. So there's a little asterisk there. I think we can all agree that not just wide receiver, but also tight end are black holes right now. The factories are shut down. They don't produce. Whereas around the NFL, they're up and steaming and, creating all kinds of product. So how does that magically materialize? Or if you're not going to produce from those spots, what do you produce instead? How well will the Patriots run the ball, I think, is the question. Because I just don't think, as Belichick said last year about N'Keal Harry and any player, you can't just wave a wand and have it happen. You need time.
So, Tom, this is one of those vexing arguments that is making its way through the ranks of Patriots, Twitter, media, etc. Are you team, they just don't have enough talent on the field, or are you team, guys are getting open, they have plenty of weapons with a Z?
Yeah, I don't understand how anyone could contend the latter with a straight face when we've watched this team since 2018 struggle mightily and do nothing to upgrade its offensive firepower. I mean, it's beyond, I think it's just merely a contrarian viewpoint at this point. Once the rabble starts to be right, which the rabble is now right as well, when they say they don't have enough guys to throw to, then I think you'll find pockets of contrarianism that say, oh, there's plenty out there. Well, if there was plenty out there in 2018, why did they go get Josh Gordon and were kicking the tires on Corey Coleman? And then when Josh Gordon washed out and they entered the season last year with Gunnar Olszewski and Jacoby Myers, why did they then mortgage really a lot to go get a broken toy again in Antonio Brown? Yet they did nothing in this offseason to work out what they had as an issue at the wide receiver spot. Maybe they're even worse, but now the weapons are fine?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a viewpoint that I think is a viewpoint just being adopted because it's, hey, I'm on an island, and who else would think this?
Is Julian Edelman quickly approaching the end of days here?
if he keeps getting driven into the ground like a tent spike, like he did against Seattle, he would be. I don't think that what we're seeing is related to the fact that Julian Edelman just can't do it anymore since he had, you know, I think 8 catches for 179 yards and was uncoverable against Seattle, in addition to making some incredibly difficult catches. But you can't go on the field with a 5'10", 34-year-old wide receiver who couldn't raise his arms over his head last year and say, let's have him run it back and do it again and expect that to work. And that's what they've done.
Now, if Tom Brady was still here, this game, I think, would be getting more attention just because it would be Jimmy Garoppolo versus Tom Brady in Garoppolo's, you know, return to New England. But there's still a little bit of juice surrounding Garoppolo. Now, this season, he's missed a couple of games so far, but was back at it on Sunday, and he looked really good. Where do you stand right now? Now that we've seen a decent amount of starts, I think it's been, what, 30 starts or 28 starts in San Francisco for Garoppolo, including that playoff run. How good of a quarterback is he?
I think he's a great thrower. I think he is a subpar decision maker. I think he gets jumpy. I think he's in the same bucket with Baker Mayfield and Carson Wentz and really Deshaun Watson and Kirk Cousins and a lot of guys. When things are going great, they're going to be in a good spot. But I just don't think – I think that's what's lacking in San Francisco. And I talked to Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area, and he was really interesting because Shanahan is – absolutely anal about the details, and Jimmy doesn't satisfy those things for him in terms of decision making. And you see it a little bit from the play calling. And what Matt pointed out, which was fascinating, was the week after he got benched, Garoppolo in Miami, ostensibly because his ankle was impacting his play, and I'm not saying it wasn't, they did nothing but throw behind the line of scrimmage in the first drive out. Matt said he had minus 20 passing yards in terms of yards in the air on that drive. And that's okay. Tom Brady was a dink and dunk guy at 1.2. But you have to remember, Jimmy's 29. He's not a developing quarterback. And the fact that he went to Eastern Illinois and then apprenticed for 3 years here in New England puts him at 29 as a still developing quarterback. So he's a tough guy to be attached to because will the skill and the mind coalesce at the same time to make him a valuable guy to have on your team in 2025.
Well, that was my next question is, do you think there's any appetite for them to maybe move on from him? Like, are they gonna have to reassess the quarterback situation at the end of this season?
It depends how the season goes, really.
Yeah.
Rich, yeah. Honestly, I mean, they go 10-6. They've already shipped off and said, okay, this is the guy we're going with. We passed on Brady, who I think Shanahan really loved the idea of. But they couldn't pull the trigger on it. Do you say, all right, let's go through to the end? Or you know what? Hey, here's what you can do. You can satisfy both. Take Jimmy to the end of his contract, wait for Brady to be at the end of his contract in Tampa, and then you get Brady to finish out at 45 yeah. in San Fran.
Yeah.
Tom, do you think I saw the
why not? You know?
Sure.
He'll still be playing.
Yeah. Let's just get all the quarterbacks here next year. Tom, I heard Phil mention this last night on Twitter. Rather, I read it on Twitter, and I'm sure mm-hmm. you guys have discussed as much as well. Do you think Cam's hurt?
Well, it was interesting because Phil shared, and I think it was a kid named, and I don't want to screw up his name, but it was also Bern Buchmacher, and then correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, Bern Buchmacher, the kid from Pat's Pulpit. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he also had tweeted that out apparently earlier. And the video of Cam following through on a throw, banging his hand pretty hard on a helmet or a shoulder pad. You can't tell. This is the All-22 film. And then looking at his hand. And Scott Zolak said that was something that he noticed as well and spoke about a little bit on the broadcast. So if you look at the numbers for Cam after that throw, they weren't great. Is that a smoking gun? We'll hopefully see today when the injury report comes out as to whether or not it impairs him or not, so that we can make a deduction. Okay, well, there's no hand injury, so if he goes in on Sunday and performs well, it's not him overcoming a great hand issue. And if he doesn't, then there's no hand issue to point to. It's just not executing.
There are a number of players eligible to come off the injured list for the Patriots beginning this week. Any indications on your end of some who might?
Really, I think Andrews would probably be the most fortuitous if they're able to get him back, obviously, because that's a domino effect along the entire offensive line. More of a wait and see with this. I mean, they are locked down these days. They really are,
yeah,
in terms of sharing info prior. So we'll see. But I would imagine that Andrews would be the domino that you're waiting to see wiggle and fall, because if he does, you know, you're in a much, much, much better position, because, you know, Ferentz, unless he's out there at practice this week, is still on the COVID list. So Andrews, to me, would be the big one, Dale.
Tom, what did you think of Bill Belichick's in-game performance against the Broncos?
I didn't like the non-challenge of the white call, and I found his defense of it absurd. Mm. Nobody's pretending, as he said to Lou, that you have five challenges. Everybody knows you can't challenge, quote, everything. So he's basically creating straw men to avoid answering the question as to whether or not Ernie Adams saw the video and said, let's do it, or he got it, Bill. And Bill said, it's first and 10 at the 18s, 11 minutes left. Let's just kick it and play some defense. I don't think these guys are going to move, which is okay if that's what it is. But, you know, don't act as if you answered a question that you didn't answer, which is what he did with Doug Kide from Nesson. So that was an irritant. I think, and just what's, you know, it's not a Senate inquest here. Just big deal.
What did you think of the
challenge? I didn't. I'm sorry. What was the other thing? Timeout?
So the other one, well, the challenge.
Oh, I have no problem with the 2-point. I think people are crazy.
Me neither. I'm 100% pro. We got in an argument on Monday about it. I'm on the side of go for two there. But the other one.
Yeah, find out what you're dealing with. Get your intel.
But what about the declining the penalty, setting up a 54-yard field goal for McManus, who had already made five field goals earlier? You would have put him out of field goal range, but obviously it would have been third down there.
That seemed like it was a Watfo decision, huh?
Mm, yeah.
What are the flipping odds that he's going to make another one?
Yeah.
Didn't love it. I mean, it's a good defense. You get the defensive player of the year playing corner. It's third and 14 against Drew Lock.
It seemed like that was a hope for a missed field goal, and I don't really trust the defense as much as maybe I should. That's what it looked like
well,
to me.
Well, here's the difference. The other thing you have to weigh into that, and that's why a lot of coaching decisions – I have a hard time, if there's logic on one side or the other, flipping out about. Because I do sometimes see, okay, he made the decision. Here's what happened. Like, he didn't challenge the James White call, but he wasn't wrong. I mean, they still had a chance to win the game. They didn't get screwed. Denver didn't score off of that. And with this play, okay, if you accept the field goal, they missed from 54. You're getting the ball near midfield.
Right.
Right?
Right.
37, 40, whatever it is. But if you don't, if you force an incompletion, then you're about to get pinned back at your five. So it's a four, it could be a 40-yard play for you if he just misses the field goal. So I don't hate that one as much as on the surface it looks nonsensical. Do anybody agree with me on that? And the 2-point thing, I want full intel immediately as to what I need. I'm going.
Yeah, I didn't like it because when you don't get it, now you've turned it into a 2-score game.
But you know. It's still
no. I mean, you know, two more scores.
No, I know, but you know, you now know that you're not going to run the clock out on yourself. In other words,
no. But I'd rather kick the point and know that okay, it's still a 1-score game. Now I got to get a 2-point conversion, but it's a 1-score game.
Yeah, but you at least have definitiveness that you would otherwise be putting off till the very end of the game, and saying yeah, and, okay, everything's riding on this.
And as it turned out, you still were able to get a couple of possessions.
Yeah, I like to find out early. Yeah. I really do.
So, Tom, we've seen, you know, God, we've gone over this so much, whether it's Harry or the tight ends this year, contributions from rookies and second-year players that have, you know, doubled, tripled, quintupled the production of some of the guys around here. But just from even going to some of the practices and reporting from the field and the guys you talk to who cover the team, do Keen and Asiasi look as far behind in practice as their on-field efforts in games that count so far this year indicate? Because I know Asiasi was open a couple times on Sunday, but it seems nuts to me that they would have used the draft capital that they've used to get zero so far this season on a team that is struggling the way that they are.
We get kicked out basically after stretching. So you get to take attendance like a homeroom teacher and then you're gone. So practice to me is borderline useless.
Okay.
You know, I had spoken about Keen a little bit and said, you know, could he have an impact with some folks and said maybe on special teams early it might be a while. And that's because he was coming from Virginia Tech where he ran an entirely different type of offense. But I just don't understand the complexity of hey, take two steps back and be an H-back like Frank Wycheck, take a screen and run for a while, because he can do that. You know, I just, the learning curve that the Patriots apparently feel is present at tight end is so daunting that to me, and I'm writing a story about this right now, why didn't you draft guys when you knew that Aaron Hernandez was never coming back and Rob Gronkowski was injury prone? As you spend draft pick after draft pick on late defensive backs, maybe throw one at tight end once in a while instead of just having Lee Smith, A.J. Derby, and Ryan Izzo as your three draft picks from 2011 through 2020. That's it. So what, I don't get it. It's not like the position is any less important, as Bill Belichick just hammering bouquets at the feet of George Kittle this week indicates. So what, why? It's puzzling to me.
In a couple of weeks, Antonio Brown's suspension will be over. He will theoretically be available to sign with an NFL team. Will the Patriots step in front of that bus again?
I would find that to be hard to believe. I mean, you saw the movie. I mean, I know you're asking because it's a good question to ask and just get everybody on the record. I believe we're probably in complete unanimity, except for I could see Fitz. No, I could see Keith.
No, it's
I forgot
Keith.
About
Keith. Oh,
Keith,
Keith wants them bad. Keith wants them. But I also know it's not going to happen.
Weird
like I'm not getting my hopes up. But yes, of course I want him. For God's sakes.
I mean, if you want to make the team better, he's going to help make it better. But
for the 2 weeks he's here.
Yeah.
Do you?
I mean, it's to me. Whatever.
Is it worth for this team? I guess giving up. Because obviously Antonio Brown, you're not giving up any draft picks, but for all the other guys that you think might be able to, stay on the field, you would have to give something up for. And there's a long list of them as the season goes on, and you look around the league, and there's teams that are 1-5 and have really good receivers. But do you think they look at it and say, yeah, we're going to go after it one more time, just like last year, a second round pick for Sanu, which blew up in their face? Are they going to be gun shy about that, or do you think they feel like, yeah, this we do need to address this?
They do need to address it because, as we talked about Edelman earlier, if he is not going to put himself on the sidelines and the doctors clear him and he goes out and plays and he's less than 100% and takes more punishment or is less effective and that continues, then you're going to burn away your only asset at the wide receiver position, it seems. So they do need to do it. Whether or not they do it remains to be seen and probably plays out over the next 2 weeks. To me, embrace the fact that you're a running team. I just don't think that adding a wideout, say you go get Marvin Jones, who I think would be a really good add. They barely throw it to him in Detroit. That team sucks. I can't imagine that Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia can be sellers at this point, given that they're almost on their way out and hanging by a thread. But if you can get a Marvin Jones, then even then, what difference does it make? I mean, he's in the last year of his deal. You're going to give up a first or a second. A second, third, or a fourth for a player like that. So at some point they have to admit, guys, don't you agree that last year felt like, all right, it's Brady. We're spending $22 million on our quarterback.
Right.
We're championship-driven and always have been. We got to do this. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
This year I just don't know if that's going to feel the same way.
Yeah.
Really, should they be sellers, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
We queried a few minutes ago if, you'd be shocked if Julian Edelman got traded away here.
I was going to say, what could they sell off? And, I mean, is Edelman even a consideration?
Yeah, I mean, Patriots who go elsewhere from that position, whether it's Welker or Amendola, can be plug-and-play players around the league. I don't know if he would want to go or not. Mm-hmm. But I guess that would be your best old asset. You're not going to trade one of the McCourties. I mean, Gilmore?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just
Yikes.
Spitballing.
Yeah, sure.
Tom, we always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.